Hey, thanks for listening to the Five Leadership Questions podcast. Our team at Lifeway Leadership would like to personally invite you to join us in Nashville this October for Pipeline 2018. This conference will be all about recruiting. Now, here's the thing. If you don't recruit leaders, you have no one to develop. So if you want to learn more about how to recruit leaders more effectively and create a culture of leadership development, then bring your team to Pipeline this fall. To register, just go to myleadershippipeline.com. Once again, that's myleadershippipeline.com. Now enjoy the podcast.
You're listening to the Five Leadership Questions podcast. I'm your host, and I'm here today with Eric Geiger.
This is me.
And who else do we have?
Well, this is Todd. Todd's being a little sheepish on the introduction because he's super nervous because he's got
nervous. He's interviewed me before.
He's got multiple levels of bosses here. So I'm Todd's supervisor, but his boss's boss is here. Right. The CEO, the
boss
chief
daddy,
the boss of all bosses.
I am so whelmed with this introduction.
At Lifeway Christian Resources, ladies and gentlemen, Tom Rainer.
Wow.
Boom. Boom. Or if you're in a meeting with Tom Rainer, you say some positive information, you may hear out of nowhere, boom.
And so, I haven't done that in a while.
Does that mean we haven't had good information in a while?
It just means I'm tired and old.
So I've been in meetings before when we've shared some really incredible news of something God's doing, and you'll hear a real loud boom, and it's piercing in your ears. And so we actually have some major booms to drop today because we're going to be talking to Dr. Rainer about his newest book, Becoming a Welcoming Church. And this isn't going to be just a book report / book promo podcast, so don't put it on double speed. Yeah. Listen at normal speed because you're going to learn some great insights about how your church can actually do this, can be a welcoming church and welcome with hospitality the people the Lord sends your way. So Dr. Rainer, boss daddy, thank you for being with us.
Thank you both, guys. And put it on 1.25 speed because my drawl needs to be sped up just a little bit. I only listen to me on 1.25. I think, man, he's slow. Let's speed that up just a little
bit. He is drinking right now a Monster Ultra Sunrise.
Monster Energy Ultra Sunrise.
Monster. You said Munster.
Monster.
Like, you know, Eddie Munster.
Sorry, man.
So zero calories, two carbs, lots of energy for someone who has had only a little bit of sleep lately.
It's a lot going on.
Here's the funny thing. Speaking of sheepish, a couple weeks ago, I got into the elevator and I had in my hand a Monster. And I was trying to hide it because Dr. Rainer was there with one or two other people. And he's like,
"What?"
And Al was like, "It's okay. He drinks them all the time."
Why would you think he wouldn't like this?
I don't know. I just, because, you know, people judge you if you're walking around with an energy drink these days.
Really?
I feel like that.
Why would they judge you?
Well, then I'm going to carry it more often because I want to see what people do to me.
They're just like, really?
Because
you're going to put that into your body?
Why is it supposed to be? It says zero calories.
No, but these are your
people
that are like
gluten-free.
The gluten-free crowd.
And
yeah, 100% vitamin 12, vitamin B12, 100% vitamin B6. I would say Dr. Rainer is drinking very healthy today.
Absolutely. And the stevia, you know, if you're going to have an artificial sweetener, stevia is the path to go.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so I know we're going to get to our questions in a second, but does this make your heart flutter at all if you drink so many of them? Because if I drink too many cups of coffee, I'll get some heart palpitations.
Not that I can tell. So
I don't know. not that you
at my age, you don't even notice that your heart's
beating. You don't even know if your heart's having palpitations.
For me, it's that or a Trenta cold brew.
A what?
From Starbucks.
Oh, okay. I thought you were talking about a cold brew boss, Todd.
No,
I'm more concerned about the listening audience than the boss here.
It's like on the secret menu. So it's like a step above. It's even bigger than Binti.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Trenta? If you didn't learn anything else on the podcast.
Trenta.
Today,
step
many
above
come
it.
To know
step
him
above.
The Trenta. I think it's like, I'm not going to go toward the Trinity. We should probably start with our questions.
All right, let's hit it. All right, so, boss, talk to us about becoming a welcoming church. What are people going to find in this book, and how do you envision how ministry leaders and people in the church can use the book. And I say that because many of you listening have used I Am a Church Member. And I've heard that a ton of people using the book. And a secret I think pastors would admit is they want to tell folks in the church, here's how you should participate in this local body of believers. But sometimes for a pastor to say it, it can come off sounding like self-serving. So the book, I'm a Church Member, helped pastors say things they needed to say, wanted to say, but were able to use an outside voice. Is this similar to that?
It is similar to it, probably not as profoundly similar in terms of, I am a church member, had a lot of high expectations of church members. Obviously, I am a church member. It had a lot of information that dealt with, you should be doing this. I see this both as an expectation book, but also as an instruction manual. Both, it has a lot of practical application to it. Now, the first thing I want to say about this book is, to me, this book is a bridge to gospel conversations. And if you begin to say, okay, this is just another practical ministry book with pragmatic advice, there is that in there. But the purpose behind it is to bridge to gospel conversations, particularly with guests who are coming in. So here's the whole thought. You have guests who are coming to your church. And let's do a hypothetical example. Let's say your church is averaging 150 in attendance. It would not be unusual for you to have, for example, four people who come to your church who are first-time guests, so maybe one family, just one family. Multiply that by 50 weeks, 200 guests. First time, more than the attendance of that church. Now, that would be a normative example right there. And here's the question, several questions. Number one, what do they experience when they come to your church? Number two, who interacts with them when they come to their church? Number three, what are they thinking as they leave in terms of, will I return to this church? So all of those are the high-level issues of becoming a welcoming church and how we're trying to bridge gospel conversations and at the same time connect with people on a healthier basis than most churches do.
So that is a fascinating stat you just said, and you've done research on the church for years. The church, you've been obsessed with the church in a healthy, great way, in a way that's been beneficial for years. I'm a pastor listening to this, just to wrap your mind around that stat, that more people likely in a normal situation will be a guest at your church this year than currently attended your church this last weekend.
And that's first-time guests.
First-time guests.
Those are not the repeaters. So a church of 150 is most likely going to have around 200 first-time guests, and you can then begin to put the numbers there. There are exceptions according to context and population growth, but that's normative. That is absolutely normative.
So, gosh, I mean, when you think about it that way, in the next 50 weeks, more people are going to be a guest here at this church than currently attend. What are we going to do with these people?
I was at my church at Spring Hill, where my son Jess is pastor. This last Sunday, we had 151 in attendance. So right at that 151, we had 19 first-time guests.
Wow,
that's high.
Yeah. And why do you think? I know it's just one church, but it's one you're closely plugged into. You actually lead a Sunday school class there. Or you don't even call it Sunday school.
It's an on campus community group that meets in a room on the church campus before worship service, and then we go to worship service.
Okay, so it's exactly like Sunday school, but not called that.
Yeah, and it's the only room that's available.
Okay,
because it's a very small church.
And so you lead that group there. So you're really super plugged in. So what?
Oh, by the way,
yes,
I get there at 7:30. I'm responsible for cleanup, taking out the trash from the previous week, for putting out the signs out front. In fact, our entire class comes at 7:30. For a class that begins at 8:33, for a worship service that starts at 10.
Now, did you choose the 8:33 time just because that's the new thing you've been doing with times lately?
No. When my youngest son, who is my pastor, was trying to learn how to tell time, he tried to fake us out. And he learned that if he said a single number, that he thought everybody knew that that was the correct time. And the time he always picked was 8:33. So his older brother, Sam and Art, would always pick on Jess. Say, Jess, what time is it? He'd say, 8:33. And they'd just die laughing. So now that he is my pastor, we have
it's an inside family joke on the star of the class.
It is, but actually I have a Facebook ad that I run for my class that I put out there, and I explain the 8:33 in the Facebook ad.
Man, I'm doing this a tangent here, but this is fascinating. You are a Sunday school teacher. I'm sorry.
Yes.
Community Bible study.
Community group leader.
Community group leader.
Yes. Using and Explore the Bible curriculum.
Boom. Which is honestly amazing curriculum.
It's amazing.
To walk people through the text just verse by verse. It's great. And you take out Facebook ads for your group.
Yes, I do.
I love that.
And we're there to serve the church. Jess was doing all of these things. He was putting inserts in the bulletin. He was putting guest cards in the pews. He was doing all these things. So that's stupid. We're going to get here an hour early, and our entire group we're going to have different tasks we could get off on all kind of tangents. But here's something else we did. Phoebe, who is married to one of our Lifeway store managers in Cool Springs, Phoebe Forrester, said, "I got an idea. Let's have our class start. I'm sorry, our community group. Let's have our community group start giving away bread to the community." Mm. So how do we do that? She said, "I'm gonna go to Panera Bread, and I'm gonna ask them if I can have all their leftovers on Saturday night." We had to put in an application. We were approved. Now we have enough bread for everybody in that church to have two loaves of bread and give away two loaves.
Oh, wow! Bread.
It's all over the place.
That's cool. Awesome.
And so now we're giving out bread to the guests.
Yeah.
And they're taking it to their neighborhood and giving, and we're having as many bread guests as we are anything.
Okay, and that's what I was going to ask. So I was curious if you had any insight on church in using that stat of 150. The normative would be 4. Yet you said this last weekend, what, 16 or 18?
19.
What's causing there to be more guests?
Look, some of it's demographics. Spring Hill's growing.
Okay.
And so you've got a constant flow of new people coming in that are looking for a church. So, yeah, I love the church, and a lot of cool things are going on, but it's a demographic hotbed right now. So
okay.
That's as much as
anything. Are there any other marketing actions going on for those new people coming in or anything like that?
Well, Facebook is our paid marketing, both for the church and for our class. Everything else is community-centric, organic invitation. So, and the bread's big. I mean, the bread is really, really big.
It's good bread.
It is. I mean, y'all can't see me. I think my hands would be about 24 inches.
Looks
apart.
About three times the size of Todd's head.
There you go.
three Todd heads smashed together.
About 18 to 24 inches.
And Todd's got a big head.
I do have a very large head.
I've never noticed that. I have a large head.
Yeah, I mean, look at
his
forehead. It's like a six-finger forehead. I've got a five-finger forehead. I've got a big forehead, but Todd's forehead.
Look, if I grow a goatee and spike my hair, it looks like a war mask. It's
fascinating. All right, take us to question 2, War Mask Man.
All right. Well, I wanted to ask a follow-up question.
Oh,
and go for it.
You know, Becoming a Welcoming Church is the title of the book, but why do so many churches think they are a welcoming church?
Gosh.
Because we are welcoming to each other. We have our relationship patterns. We go to the people that we know. And I tell you, the people in B&H did an incredible job on the promo video on this. What's the guy's name?
Dave?
Is he the actor?
Travis.
Travis, yeah.
Oh,
he's hilarious, man.
He's
excellent.
Well, they did this video, and it tells a story that answers the question that you just asked, Todd. And it is, we typically are friendly to one another.
Right.
I'm an introvert, so naturally I'm going to go to people with whom I have some type of relationship. But even extroverts do that as well. And so— we all think we're friendly. Every type of secret guest survey I've ever done, every type of consultation I've done, the church has thought it was friendly. Most of the time it was not, because they were friendly to each other, but not to the outsiders.
That's good. We'll be sure and put that video.
Oh, yeah, put a link to that video.
Because
it
is hilarious. Yeah, you guys need to check it
absolutely.
Out.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he's Dwight Schrute of Lifeway.
He's hilarious, man.
So what did prompt you to write the book at the end of the day?
I do most of my writing now by the response of the blog post at TomRainer.com. And so I did 2 or 3 blog posts related to the issue of guests, particularly one that got me in a lot of trouble about the stand and greet time that even to this day people connect to me about.
Now, That is true. I have heard so many people quote Dr. Rainer on this, and I've heard people be relieved that someone actually said it.
Yeah, because they hate doing it.
Because the stand and greet time for a long time was customary in a lot of churches.
Oh, that made us friendly.
yeah, hey, you should go and shake hands for, you know, 20 seconds. And yes, you have believed that it's not the most effective.
I have believed that, but also I've heard that from a lot of people.
Right.
If you hear it just from me, don't believe it, because you get me around fewer people and I'm happy. And somebody comes and gets in my space and greets me and lets me know for 7 seconds how glad they are that I'm there. I'm not going to believe it. But now we've heard that. I'm infamous for Twitter polls. Yeah, really accurate. I just did an interview with Scott McConnell, Lifeway Research, and you say Twitter polls, and he just puts both hands over his head.
Because he's a Wharton researcher, right?
Yeah. He is. And Twitter polls, margin of error is probably plus or minus about 80% one way or the other. I did this Twitter poll, and I said, when you visit a church, what is it that troubles you the most? I don't want my exact wording, but close to it. And stand and greet just was overwhelmingly the number one that came back.
So I've got the top 10 responses. I won't read them all, but stand and greet's number one.
Number one. Boom.
Then no place to get information. Bad church website. Now, as a person who's looked for a new church from time to time as I've been around, I know that's the first place we go look because we're trying to see what time the service is.
And that's the main thing you're looking for, what time, right?
Physical address and what time.
Physical address and what time.
Because you want to put it in your GPS and you want both of those things above the fold. I realize it's digital, but you know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
When you go to the homepage, what you see immediately, those two things have to be there. The website is viewed primarily by guests, not by members.
Insider church language.
Mm. And that's a lot of acronyms, you know.
The WMU will be meeting in the parlor. What's the parlor?
Yeah.
right after the BPW has their meeting.
Right. I can't connect here. I don't even know what these people are talking about.
Yep.
Number 10 is actually one that I find more frequent, and that's dirty facilities. Because a lot of times we tend to overlook.
That's a rap song, not a runner. Sorry.
I'm clueless.
Hey,
Todd, I'm starting wearing cool socks.
I did notice that yesterday, too. You've got multiple cool socks. Yes. Todd, I have no idea. Todd's got penguins. No.
I just got to let you know, this is my late life crisis. I had a midlife crisis where I got an Infiniti G car. A sports coupe.
Yeah.
I guess kept that for about 6 months. And then now the socks.
I will say colored socks, this is very much out of character because you pretty much do wear.
I wear the uniform.
Almost the same thing daily.
Yes, exactly.
And now all of a sudden colored socks and energy drinks have entered the scene.
I'm wearing colored socks because I'm drinking energy drinks. That's what it is. I'm going to order that.
I don't know what's going on.
Oh, my poor wife.
All right. But, you know, I just wanted to kind of pull those out.
That's great.
As, you know, it is interesting. I've seen some of your polls from time to time, and I know that some of those have really just taken off. So I can understand how that would prompt.
And I'm going to jump off that into question three because I think there's some overlap here since you just basically read from the book some of the things that I think hit in question three, which – If you want to skip it, great. If you want to expand on it, that's fine. What are some of the most common mistakes churches make in welcoming or not welcoming people in their church?
Okay, we just mentioned website.
Right.
The two things on the website, of course, having a decent website, but also basic signage. We go to our church all the time. We go to our church usually every week. We know how to get where we need to go. Even in small churches. Once again, I'm in a church. I said attendance was 151 last week. I'm in a church where there's basically the foyer, two or three kids' rooms, three or four kids' rooms, and the worship center. I mean, that's basically it, other than the restrooms. We still have people say, where's the restroom? So we got signage now that points to the two restrooms that are in our facility. So good signage is another one. Another one is who you have on the welcoming team, whether it's a greeter team, welcoming team.
Yep.
Sometimes we got the wrong people on the bus to use the Collins, and then the wrong seat on the bus. So those are three biggies right there.
So on signs and welcoming people, I want to ask a couple of follow-up questions. So I'm a pastor listening, and I hear, okay, I need signs. Are there a couple places you'd say, here's where you for sure should have them? Should you have them in the parking lot? Should
Absolutely.
You wait till the entrance? Where's some spots?
Well, you need them in the parking lot. We use mobile signs. Okay.
Those A-frame looking
those
signs.
Those A-frames. Uh-huh. Yep. And I'm responsible for putting them out on Sunday morning. So we already have signs at the road, the main road. And so then there's this way to the entrance, and then there's another sign that says take a left to the entrance. And so we're basically guiding people to us. Then we have an entrance canopy. That is part of our signage, so you can see clearly where to go. And then we have the typical guest parking and the handicap parking well marked as well.
Okay.
And in our particular situation, we have to have signage that says additional parkage because we lease warehouse space, and we have to point them to that. So pointing to the parking, pointing to the entry point to get them in the door. Once they get in the door, we have digital signage that points to everything.
So I'm a pastor. And gosh, I don't really have anybody that I've ever thought of as the welcoming committee. I might have a couple of guys who pass out the bulletins as ushers. Where should I first have people it welcoming? Should it be out in the parking lot? Should it be at the front door? Where should I first position people?
I would say in most cases the parking lot.
Okay.
Because the cars are coming in.
Yep.
Even if it's a small church where, okay, we've got these 20 parking places, what are you doing out here?
Yeah.
It's a waving to them. It's some kind of greeting. Thank you for being here. Then at the front door, but let me share where we miss it. Okay. This is the place that we miss it. We did surveys of guests, and here is what they told us. They felt most unwelcome after they sat down in the worship center.
Because no one talked to them?
No one talked to them because they're sitting there early. Members don't sit down early. They come in at the last minute.
Right.
They're there by themselves. Mm. And so we actually have part of our welcoming team, a minimum of two people in the worship center to go talk to people and to introduce other people to go sit with them.
And that's different from the stand-up welcoming time because
it's a casual conversation.
It feels more casual.
Yeah. You're going up to them before the worship
service.
It's
not forced in the middle of a 20-second.
Everybody stand up and greet one another.
Aren't you glad? Aren't you glad to be here?
Tell people you love him. Tell people you love her. Well, I hate those times.
And I expect to be greeted by, the people standing at the doors.
Good point.
I don't expect.
Yeah.
I mean, that's gonna be something that is, surprising.
That's really
delight, almost.
Here's an example. Spring Hill, once again, for the uninitiated southern bedroom community of Nashville, where I go to church with my son, Spring Hill is seeing a lot of people come in, and it's really weird. They're coming primarily from the Northeast and the Northwest. We're getting Oregon, Washington, and then upstate New York. It's really kind of weird that they're coming from those two areas. And family recently connected with our church has become a part of our church. They're from upstate New York. And I just asked them. I took them out to lunch. That's part of my ministry as well, to find guests to take to lunch. And I took them to lunch, and I said, tell me this. You started coming on one Sunday, and then you never stopped coming. Hmm. What was it? They said, we sat down in the worship center and people just started talking to us like it was a normal conversation. They didn't talk about the signage. They didn't talk about the website. They didn't talk about the greeters at the front door. They didn't talk about the greeters in the foyer. We also have runners in the foyer to help young families sign in their kids. They didn't talk about any of those. They talked about someone just came up and had a conversation. They did not understand at that point that was what we do. But now they're going to become greeters because one of the best places to get greeters, new members.
Yes. I do. I have seen that for sure. They're excited about the church because they're brand new.
Newness, freshness.
Yep. Yeah. Newness, freshness. And they also know exactly what it felt like to be a first-time guest just recently.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's so good. All right, I'm going to move us to our next question. Is there a difference between what millennials want when they visit a church and other generations? Do churches need to implement different strategies for different generations?
Answer to the second question is no.
Okay.
You don't. The answer to the first question is yes. They do have different expectations, and that sounds like, okay, Rainer, you're really confusing me. If the answer to the first one is yes, the answer to the second one should be yes as well. Here's the reality. Millennials and Gen Z, as they're beginning to get into early adulthood or late teenage years, those two generations, the big thing is just be genuine. Just be genuine. Boomers, builders, Gen X is kind of a mix in there, but those two generations have a higher tolerance for inauthenticity, if you will. Right. And so the person who comes up to him and say, "Hello, brother, my name is brother such and such." Well, right. I was with millennial recently. This was not a church, but I was sitting with a millennial at a denominational function, our denomination. And the person got up to start whatever it was, and it was, "I'd like to welcome you brothers and sisters to our beloved gathering." And this guy looks over at me, he said, "This is so fake."
Mm, right.
This is just so, they don't talk like this in the real world.
Wow.
And I looked around, and the old folks like me were, okay, that's just what we do. And you could tell, well, this millennial was expressing it. That's not genuine. So there's a, you see now why I said yes and no.
Yeah.
The millennial generation, all the younger generations, just be real. Don't put on this fake show.
Right.
And don't talk differently once you're in a church facility than outside of the mm-hmm. church facility.
I've always found in, you know, working with young adults, especially back in the day, that care makes up for a lack of connection sometimes. If somebody's personalities wouldn't naturally hang out. If you're looking at whether it's discipleship or development or whatever, the fact that that person cares about them often makes up for that maybe lack of personal connection.
I think so. And I'm grateful because I don't personally connect well at all, but I can care when I need to.
And you've done research in the past on millennials. I mean, that's something that you've been asked to speak multiple times on.
Yes.
On millennials. And so writing this book and the insights you have on becoming a welcoming church, and to Todd's question about how to welcome millennials, does all your research on the past about millennials sync up with what we're
it's foundational and it's complementary. So everything that we're finding that we found back in the millennial research, we interviewed 1,200 millennials. It's a pretty massive project. So everything that we found out then measures up very well now.
Good. All right, so what message, as people read the book, Becoming a Welcoming Church, which I want to encourage you to read, and this would be, as a former executive pastor, Todd, I think this you would agree, this is something we would read with our staff.
Totally.
This would be something that we would sit down and say, okay, let's evaluate ourselves and see where gaps are and build plans to. So I want to encourage you not to just read this individually, but this would be a great team read. So what message do you hope will resonate most with the readers?
The single message is this: one or two of the small points that you will pick out of this book will make an eternal difference. And that's why I keep calling this book a gospel bridge. It is not a deep theological treatise, obviously. It is a gospel bridge. And so as churches begin to practice this, I'm talking so much about my church because it's experiential right now. Mm-hmm. And the reality of it is I've been declining all weekend invitations just so I can be a church member. And I'm absolutely loving it. But go back to the church at Spring Hill. Church at Spring Hill, I said attendance around 150, 151 this last week. And every week, and I'm going to say for like the last 5 or 6 weeks, we've had someone, an adult, write on their welcome card, "I want to follow Christ."
Oh, man, that is awesome.
Okay, what's a part of that? Not totally, but what is a part of it? They come mm-hmm. and they feel welcome.
Yes, absolutely.
That's the message that I would want to resonate from here. This is more about the gospel than some type of church growth methodology.
That's great. So the motivation beneath this isn't some, you know, growth funnel as much as it's kingdom expansion.
It is.
People hearing the gospel, they come, they receive. And this is to me, the motivation of all great church hospitality. I mean, the word hospitality means to welcome strangers. And that's what Christ did for us. That's when we talk about the gospel motivation. That's exactly what Christ did for us. We were strangers, enemies of him. He pursued us, welcomed us.
Now you're preaching.
And so that's what we want people to have the heart to welcome the guests in their church.
Absolutely.
Is because Christ welcomed them.
Absolutely.
So one of the things I do want to say is, if you get this book, and Eric mentioned walking through it with your staff, there's actually a couple really helpful things in the back. There's a church facility audit. There's also a secret guest survey. One of the most helpful things that I did at every church I was at was find a couple other like-minded churches and we would actually use our First Impressions Ministries to shop each other. And then have a
oh, I like meet. That. I like that.
And this is a great tool because it gives you a framework to actually find mm-hmm. another like-minded church who's trying to move forward in this area and share with each other. Share with each other what your findings are. So
I like it.
Thank you guys so much for listening. In our show notes, you'll of course find a link to the book. Also, you'll find a link to that video that we talked about earlier. And we'll be giving away 3 copies on Twitter for those people. Anybody who replies or retweets will be eligible for one of those copies if you win it. And then also...
And it's a win it.
Also on our Facebook group as well, which is Church Leaders. If you'll go there, we'll be giving away 3 copies there as well. So thank you much so much for listening. And please hop over to iTunes and leave us a rating and review.
Thank you for listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. Don't forget to sign you and your team up for Pipeline 2018 at myleadershippipeline.com and join us in Nashville this October.